From despair and resilience to love and hope, we explore the full range of human emotions today. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, this is In the Moment, the podcast version. Music from When the World Gets Heavy from Nick Haar, poetry from Lindy Obach, plus SDPB's Steve Zwemke talks with Sean Conboy. Conboy is deputy editor at the Players Tribune. That's an online platform founded by Derek Jeter for professional athletes to share personal stories. It's storytelling at its most compelling, and since we love a good story, we wanted to share it with you. Steve and Sean begin by talking about a story from Ottawa Senators forward Bobby Ryan.
Bobby's story is kind of the perfect explanation of why the Players Tribune exists. Because, you know, as maybe casual hockey fans even know, Bobby's story was really dramatic when he was a kid. So his parents had a domestic violence incident when he was young. I think he was about 10, 11 years old, and his dad abused his mother, and his dad was set to go to prison. And so they basically assumed new identities and fled New Jersey and went to California. And so this is a kid who's in middle school at the time, who's a really bright kid, a really good hockey player, and he assumes a completely different identity. And his father actually was really in and out of the picture, and so it was really him and his mother kind of relying on one another in California. And so Bobby couldn't have any social life. He couldn't really have friends get to know him because they were always very paranoid that, you know, it might be discovered what happened to them. And so really hockey was the only thing that he had in his life. And it's kind of remarkable because, you know, when you hear Bobby's story now, it's been told, but so many of the stories focus on the details of what happened with his parents and how kind of, you know, sad it was. And when Bobby came to us, you know, his mom had just passed away from liver cancer, and his point was that he wanted to tell the positive story of his mother and how incredible she was as a, you know, really mostly a single mom, taking him to hockey practice, sacrificing, you know, her own life and money so that she could buy him, you know, skates and sticks and all these things. And, you know, there's one scene in there that I still to this day kind of chokes me up, you know, where Bobby's talking about how him and his mother used to go to California Pizza Kitchen and get the right happy hour special, Caesar salad and one pizza, and they would split it. And, you know, I know actually wasn't the editor who worked on the story with him. My one of my brilliant colleagues, Dan Treadway, worked with him on it. And, you know, Dan was saying how emotional Bobby got every point in that story. And the idea really, I think, was a really special one. And so the story is called Dear Mom. And so you can search Bobby Ryan, Players Tribune, and the story can come up for people who might be listening. But I think that story gives you quite an interesting perspective on what we do, because I really do think that, you know, it wouldn't have been the same if it wasn't all in Bobby's own words. And there's such a personal level to that story and the tribute to his mother that I think that is kind of us at our best. But it ultimately, I mean, the credit goes to Bobby, because to have the courage to be that open and raw about such an emotional topic, literally, I think it was about a week or less than a week after his mother had been buried, is quite remarkable. And I know that story touched a lot of people.
And Bobby Ryan, for those who don't know, his actual name, Robert Shane Stevenson, and Bobby was the name that he changed to and decided to keep that name later on in life. Bobby and his wife just had a child, and Bobby's mother was able to know that child, although briefly, before she was able to pass away. So just another interesting part of that. Sean, last month, readers were really touched by a piece called Dark, 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 Dark in which former National League Hockey goaltender and Stanley Cup winning goalie Corey Hirsch opened up about a condition he had dealt with throughout his career. Thousands and thousands of readers thanked him, gave him encouragement and well wishes, and he responded with a very touching thank you, a video thank you. Share with us the details of Corey Hirsch's piece.
Yeah, again, I mean, another one where, you know, Corey was a goaltender in the 90s who a lot of people might kind of vaguely remember. He was actually the third goalie when the New York Rangers won the Stanley Cup in 1994, and he was just a rookie. And, you know, at the time, he was going through something that he didn't understand, which is that kind of during the Eastern Conference Finals, when he was a healthy scratch, when the Rangers were playing the Capitals, he was down in Washington, D.C., and he was out at a bar with a couple other hockey players. And he started just having these really deep, dark thoughts out of nowhere. And, you know, the way he described it is, you know, have you ever, for example, and, you know, maybe people listening have experienced this, been driving down the road in your car and you just for a second think, oh, what if I swerved into the other lane? Or what if I, you know, crashed my car? Or, you know, these just strange things, right? Or if you had a knife out in the kitchen, you just think, oh, you know, what if I harm myself? And it's just such a stupid thing, right? It's almost as if your brain's saying, think of the worst thing that you can think of, right? And then, of course, like, you know, people with normal brain functions, just that thought goes away. And before you even have time to explore what that thought means or why you had it, it's already gone. And you start thinking about your email or what you have to do that day. But with Corey, these thoughts just kept repeating over and over and over. And so as the title references, dark, 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 he would think these things, and then they were just on a loop, and he couldn't stop. And he had no idea what was wrong, because granted, you know, this is the early 90s. So you can't necessarily just maybe go on, you know, your computer and Google symptoms or reach out to people who might be experiencing different things. And to compound on top of that, he's a goalie in the National Hockey League, right? And the culture of hockey is very much to never admit when something might be wrong. And so he hides it and he suppresses this and he doesn't know what's going on. And so he ends up getting traded to the Vancouver Canucks and he's really struggling. And so you have the pressures of hockey and all these different things and you have these thoughts that won't go away. And so he can't sleep. He can barely eat. He actually lost about 40 pounds. And so his teammates are looking at him like, something is clearly going on and he can't tell anyone. And so eventually this, you know, drives him to get in his car and, you know, stand at the edge of a cliff, and he ends up backing the car up about a mile and, just puts his foot on the gas and he's going to drive over the cliff and end his life. And he slammed on the brakes and, I don't want to kind of spoil why for the people who haven't read the story, but he stopped and he still didn't have any idea what was wrong with him. And it wasn't until years later that he was finally diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. And, you know, this is a key point in the story because, you know, now obsessive compulsive disorder is kind of trivialized or almost laughed at. You know, people wash their hands a lot or are really clean and they say, oh, you know, I have OCD, I'm obsessive compulsive. But what a lot of people don't realize is people with what's called true OCD don't manifest any physical symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder. It's all in their brain. And it can be very, very deep and very serious and can actually really derail people's lives. And so in, you know, eventually Corey did get help and really turned his life around in a pretty amazing way. And, you know, now he's actually an analyst on TSN, right? Yep. Up in Canada. And, you know, before he released this story, you know, it was kind of a nerve-wracking thing for him because he has children now and he has a family, and he knew that, you know, quite a lot of people may read this. And, you know, he was a little bit nervous about what the reaction might be. And remarkably, and maybe unsurprisingly, when it was released, the reaction was unbelievable. The amount of people who are currently suffering from similar symptoms and kind of didn't understand what might be wrong with them. Maybe they just, you know, thought they were just losing their minds or something, and they didn't really know that they had an actual neurological condition, kind of realized that they might have something similar and have reached out for help. And you know, Corey said that there's been hundreds and hundreds of people that have emailed him saying that their story touched them on a personal level and that they could relate in some way. And so it's pretty unbelievable because, you know, it wasn't easy for him to be so honest about the details of just how badly his life was derailed by the condition.
And you mentioned Corey is on television. He does an excellent job for TSN. I've been watching him all season. Sean Conboy, deputy editor of the Players Tribune, is our guest right now. Sean, the Corey Hirsch story is the feature that made me want to share your website with our listeners, those who aren't already familiar, because these stories are amazing. And the people that share these stories are people that most all of us are familiar with. We just have a couple of minutes left. I was hoping we could touch on one more story here. This is one that has more of another happy ending here. It's a relatively lengthy piece written by Michael Vick just before this year's Super Bowl. This is a man who wanted a chance to return to Atlanta. He got that chance, but not as early as he had wished. And it was a former Atlanta Falcon, Roddy White, that also played a role in helping Vick realize that dream.
Yeah, you know, the Michael Vick, to me, as somebody who, you know, was, you know, somebody who watched those Falcons teams in the early 2000s and just couldn't believe, you know, the athleticism that I was seeing. I mean, Mike Vick changed the quarterback position during that time. And I think when we started kind of thinking about this story, when we kind of knew that Michael was interested in opening up a little bit about where he's been in his life the last few years, you know, instantly your mind goes to the scope of what the story could be, right? And I think that, you know, most people, most sports fans now associate him with the dogfighting incident that sent him to prison. And as we were thinking about this, you know, it's kind of interesting because there's so much more to his story, both before and after that incident happened, that makes him a much more nuanced and kind of fascinating person. And, you know, it's almost impossible to kind of sum up, you know, his letter to Atlanta in just a couple minutes There's so much there. But I think to me, you know, the important thing is that it starts on the first day of his sentence at Leavenworth Penitentiary. And instantly, I think for readers, you're put in his shoes. And this is somebody who is going to spend 2 years in prison, and reality is kind of setting in, and yet the one thing that he really holds on to is his identity as the quarterback of the Falcons. And I think the key thing that, you know, we took away, everybody that, you know, read the piece, I think, took away was how interesting it is, the psychology of athletes and what is so important to them. And Atlanta was so important to this guy, and his identity is being the quarterback of the Falcons. And so there's a scene in the piece where Michael finds out while he's in prison, he's actually on the phone with his mother, and his mother breaks some really bad news to him that his grandmother had a stroke. He was very close with his grandmother. And so Michael realizes that he's probably never going to see his grandmother again because he's in prison, and that hits him pretty hard. And so he's walking up the stairs to the TV room where the NFL draft is going on, and he's been on the phone so long that he actually missed the Falcons selection. And so, you know, one of the inmates comes up to him and just says, "Hey, you know, did you see who Atlanta picked?" And he says, "No, I was on the phone." And then he says, "They picked Matt Ryan." And of course, you know, that was a clear indication that, you know, Michael's time as the quarterback of the Falcons was over. And now this is something that probably, you know, everybody listening and, you know, everybody at the time assumed would happen. But I think what you have to understand is, you know, for Michael, you know, it was so hard to let that thing go. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of articulates in the piece a lot more in depth that, you know, just how much holding on to that identity was the only thing kind of keeping him grounded in prison. And so he ends up, you know, at the end of the piece, I almost don't want to spoil it, but he returned to Atlanta in front of all those fans for the first time, you know, after he stepped away from the game is something that was kind of remarkable. And the response of, you know, the people of Atlanta to him to this day is something that I think a lot of people outside of Atlanta can't quite even comprehend how deep that bond goes, despite everything that's happened. And so, you know, I know that, you know, some people listening may not, you know, feel like they can ever sort of forgive Mike Vick for what happened. But I think that if you read this piece, you get a side of him that you may not have opened yourself up to before and may not have realized he had. And I think that you see the complexity of someone. And I think that that's why what we try to convey with every piece that we do is that, you know, people, these athletes that you see that are often painted as kind of superheroes are pretty complex and they have many, many different sides.
Yeah.
And I think that that piece is one that is shows, you know, a few different sides of Mike, who was an absolute cultural icon at the time.
Let's have some poetry. This is South Dakota poet Lindy Obock reading her poem, Southwest by Dakota.
Because you have now promised to take me to your red Southwest, I want to promise you the same. Let me take you to my Southwest, broken by badlands and shadowed by sagebrush. We could walk the trails I built and carve names, sweet nothings, into the sandstone walls of Mada Hay switchbacks. Mindful of water bars, I will lead you, eyes closed, deep into scoria hills, burning coal veins, my summer. Because your braid is thick, long, dark enough, would you let me use your rope to tether my raft after we wind through shallow river branches along the old man's stubble of spring wheat? The pine shelter belt has grown tall enough now, taller than how I feel lying next to you on a twin bed. A row of choke cherry trees, sticky like jam, leaves thin scratches on my wrists when I entangle myself from the thought of you. I dream of your Southwest. What sun-spotted lizards will you place in my weak-hearted palm? Will you halt me with a hand to my thigh to show me blooming desert chicory? My Southwest can sting like brine, goes down easy and smooth only for locals. Come, drink with me. Tip your head back and let me gently stroke your white throat.
That's Lindy Obock reading Southwest by Dakota. You can hear poets read their work every Friday on In the Moment. Nick Haar started playing guitar and writing songs when he was just 16. Today, he's an independent singer, songwriter, and musician. Both intimate and expansive, his work explores the adventure that is life. Nick stopped by the SDPB studios in Rapid City. Here's a song he originally wrote for his wife that ended up having an impact in the world beyond.
This is a song called World Gets Heavy. It's just kind of one of those songs that on those tough days, just remembering that you have someone there that cares for you and will walk alongside you in the rough times. So
the day. Days will get better, I know you'll see it too. As long as we've got each other, we'll never lose. One thing that I'll always know for sure is I'll be holding your hand through every door. I'll be standing by your side down whatever path we may choose. All those rough days will take them nice and slow. When your time comes, I'll be ready to go. When the world gets heavy, just know I'm here for you. When the weight of the world on your shoulders is way too much to bear, just call on me and I'll hold up an ocean all to you. When the silence around takes over, you're looking but there's no one there. Well, you can count on me to always have a song for you. The days will get better, I know. As long as we've got each other, we'll never lose. 'Cause if it's one thing that I'll always know for sure, it's I'll be holding your hand through every door. And I'll be standing by your side down whatever path we may choose. All those rough days will take a nice and slow. When your time comes, I'll be ready to go. When the world gets heavy, just know I'm here for you.
That's our podcast for today. Join me in the moment, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain. From all of us at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lori Walsh. Stay in the moment.
I'm here.